When I first heard of our theme for June, I was immediately excited. No concept resonates more with me than that of legacy. I felt like Brer Rabbit, please don't throw me into that briar patch. Legacy in conventional terms is anything handed down from the past as from an ancestor or predecessor. I don't know about any of you, but I've sure had my share of moments I've wanted to erase from the ledger of my life. The prevalence of that sentiment is why folks along in their years get such a kick out of the bouquets that eventually get thrown their way. John Wayne gets a gift Oscar. Tony Bennett snuggles up to the mic with Lady Gaga. The younger of you among us this morning, stressed in the midst of busy careers, may understand why we budding codgers of the world tend to be less difficult on ourselves as we age. Forget what we'd like to erase. We've made it to retirement and beyond in one piece. We're so giddy, we'd click our heels if it wasn't absolutely impossible. But we were talking about legacy, weren't we? There can be generational claims upon legacy. Ours is a generation, perhaps more accurately, a couple of generations combined, that will be remembered for successfully bringing to the forefront of our discourse the issue of marriage equality, culminating this past week in a celebration of national victory. Now, shifting gears to the idea of a personal legacy, we must first acknowledge the futility of any attempt to manipulate how we're remembered. We are who we are. The core of our persona is read clearly by an even minimally observant individual. Or so I think. It overrides the most carefully constructed building of image. It's not how carefully our actions are weighed, but how true they are to what the moment has made. What we project to the world over our duration on Earth is a result of the mating of the moments we've been present for with our unique individual capacities to naturally shine in or shrink from those moments. I want to share with you this morning an approach to daily living that I've hardly mastered while remaining aware of how to move in the direction of its maximization. The approach is to simply make myself available to or to surrender to the moments that will meet me this day. In this context, pulse points are places that emit energy from human expression and interaction. There are a quadrillion pulse points on the global landscape of existence. I have tried to cultivate a mindset whereby each one of those pulse points packs the power of the whole of existence. And not unlike the concept of an exploding atom. And so, if while residing at any of those pulse points and surrendering to its power, I even once during a day clearly leave my stamp, my legacy is further built. What I leave behind will have been further solidified, hopefully for the good of and to the glory of our interconnected web of creation. In my fallible but well-intended way, I managed to approach many a moment with a recognition of a legacy in perpetual shaping by forces outside my control. To depict a slice from that journey, I'll now cobble together a recent day during which my legacy may or may not have been served to my liking. As is the case on many days, I begin this one with a walk through Landover Woods on a trail carved into the very northwest corner of Seattle. I'm with Luke, he of elevated lab ridgeback pedigree, who yet somehow still remains a mutt. The vast majority of our time here will run to a soundtrack of footsteps and paw steps and little else. This early, and always to my surprise, we have this wonderful walk almost exclusively to ourselves, which makes for a peacefully secluded entry to our day. But as it relates to legacy, what possibly? Maybe this, that I honestly believe I emerge from any walk through the woods a better man than the guy who entered them. The reason being, I never fail to couple my pure aesthetic enjoyment with a section of time concentrated on meditation. This meditation can be on any topic. I won't impose upon you my method of random selection. Random as it is, it yet usually manages to be applied in the direction of something hovering over my plate on that particular day. That leads to some satisfaction in a sense of resolution, often acquired before the home stretch of the hike when we can just chill and enjoy. And that sense of resolution usually gets applied, maybe not without a little sweat, but nonetheless, toward the end of my making some kind of good progress, hopefully of an interpersonal nature, by sundown. At least the modest stuff of legacy. Then I get home, where our son and his family are visiting. My son has something on his mind. There has just been a home robbery down our block, and he's convinced that I should wait no longer to get a handgun for self-defense. I tell him thanks, I appreciate his concern, but I decided long ago to never own a firearm of any kind for any reason. Maybe a little radical, but I say it without any overtone of self-righteousness. I respect anyone's right to own any kind of firearm he or she wants, given it's acquired legally, stored responsibly, and other than at a range or another safe location, fired only as a last resort. Still, he looks at me as if I were crazy. There would be no easy meeting of the minds on this issue. After 15 minutes of back and forth, escalating to near hotness, in spite of my entering wide-eyed to the importance of keeping it from getting there, I miss my chance. Justin says, "Dad, your mind is just set on certain things. You can't think any other way than your own way." I meekly deny it, numbed in part by his stating it and in part by my inadequacy in coming up with any further response. Mercifully, our exchange fizzles to an end right there. Later, I reflect on it. Dadgum, my mind isn't so set. Ever since Justin started talking about his stance on gun ownership a couple of years back, I've slowly come around to see his side. Yes, I guess I was totally set in my thinking before then. Why didn't I tell him, "Son, you're the reason I've taken on an open-mindedness about this. I'm not about to own a gun myself, but I don't judge you for thinking differently." Well, the next time we talked, in a much calmer moment, I told him that. He looked genuinely surprised. Maybe, just maybe, I'd stumbled upon another legacy moment, a calibration of how I'm regarded through the eyes of my son. I notice it's edging toward lunchtime. Time to prepare a quick brown bagger and head off to Shoreline UU to the biweekly meeting of Gerald Forster's Appreciating Elderhood group. Something of uplifting nature always happens there. After a brief time of casual chatting and snacking, we get down to that day's designated topic. something that will focus our attention upon positively articulated interpretations of what our life journeys keep teaching us about ourselves and each other. I'm one of the younger people at these meetings, but nonetheless a senior citizen living the last third of my days. I enjoy sharing insights with fellow two-thirders, never ceasing to be amazed at how wisdom seems to ripen with age. I wish, as a relatively new member here at Shoreline UU, that I'd known many of my older colleagues longer to gain a fuller appreciation of how they've run the good race, staying the course or changing course as the storms they've weathered may have dictated. I would thereby no doubt have better insight into the fullness of their legacies. As a brief aside, let me share from a personal angle one downside to what we as elders project to younger friends and associates. It was underscored by a recent experience at this church. I'm sure many of you, whatever your age, can relate to something along the lines of this experience. It's something more commonly associated with those of us who've discovered that the passing of a half dozen decades or more has robbed us of some degree of cognitive dexterity. So it was that at a meeting of our church's nominating committee, I seconded a motion that we offer a spot of high responsibility to a certain one of our members, all along visualizing a face that belonged to another name. It's a kind of misplacement, transposition, whatever one may call it, that was unfamiliar to a younger me. As jarring as it is, we can often dance around the consequences. Not so in this instance. As the gentleman I had visualized approached me at the next Sunday's service, I made the offer to him on behalf of the committee, and he left to consider it. Lo and behold, what happens? The gentleman who truly owns the name approaches me literally seconds later. He's responding to the phone message I'd earlier left him while visualizing the different face. I managed to keep my cool and treat the present conversation as if it were my first of the morning. Still, the ensuing worship service was a virtual blur. So weighing on my mind was the tangled web I'd woven. I just couldn't help thinking if a person who knew little else about who I was were to appraise me, based upon such social butchering, I'd justly suffer. If the patrons I serve at the downtown Seattle Library were to judge me based upon my diminished hearing, which causes me to misunderstand some of the questions I field at the information desk, some would consider me, I'm sure, to be of unsound mind. But back to the appreciating elderhood meeting. It goes very well as usual. This day we managed to deftly weave between dealing with the specter of death and being thankful for the length of days long taken under wing. And I leave with a thankfulness for the forbearance of fellow elders who know that the increase in our sputterings upon life's path weigh no more upon our legacy than our gallantry in weathering them with all the good grace we can muster. When I arrive home in mid-afternoon, my granddaughter shoots me an expectant glance. 5-year-old Kaylee has, for the better part of the day, been asking me to play with her. Flimsy excuses will work no longer. She's hot on my trail as I go downstairs to hang my jacket. I turn from the closet and she's right there. "Well, where do we go?" I motion to the adjoining playroom. She has with her the latest gadget for kiddie creativity. It's a tablet with an app that stores many different drawings of the kind you'd see in a standard coloring book. Each of the many sections on screen are to be filled by selecting from a broad menu of colors. We sit together on a cozy couch. Kaylee asked my advice on every single color selection. The picture she selected is of a princess in a flowing formal dress picking fruit from a beautiful grove. Some of my choices she accepts with a studied nod. Others are rejected outright. That's okay, but how about this color? After a few minutes, our final project beams back at us in resplendent hues. "We have to save this one," I insist. She looks at me in puzzlement. "Can't do that," she says. "This tablet can't save? Oh, that's a shame," I say. "I'd really like to see that one again." "Grandpa," she says, rising to the task of a teaching moment, "we can always remember it." After just a short while visiting with each of the three grandchildren, it's time to leave for a homeless shelter. 2 evenings a month, I volunteer at a small church in Ballard that converts to a shelter for mentally ill adults for a few nights per week. I bring only a backpack that carries a blanket and pillow, something to read, and a few essential toiletry items. Upon arrival shortly before 5 o'clock, I get briefed on who and how many guests my hosting partner and I will soon be welcoming. I prepare a pot of coffee and begin the basic setting of our dinner table. When the guests arrive, they get situated at what will later be their sleeping stations. Meanwhile, I walk out to the lot to greet the evening's assigned dinner provider, and my partner and I assist her in bringing packages, trays, and steaming containers indoors. Soon our guests are called into the kitchen. Half of them I know. The other half are first-timers, shuffling nervously as I give the blessing upon our food. After we serve and seat ourselves together at the long table with barely a spot not covered by some basket or bread or container of juice or condiment or package of crackers or cookies, I do my best to engage my fellow housemates of the next 14 hours. My training has primed me to ask the right kind of questions, not the kind apt to probe the corners of existence that convey deprivation or even pain. No, far better to steer toward the surprisingly large expanse of common ground that binds us all. Then, to the extent that any of them choose to broach a vignette from their singular journey, my partner and I make use of the potential for mutual reward, ours being a continuing educational grasp of the dignity behind playing badly dealt hands with deft resourcefulness, theirs being the reward of being listened to. Until lights out at 9 p.m., our pockets of conversation give way to watching television or just tending each of us to our readings or snackings or just reclining in our chosen corners, taking in whatever shelter means to us individually. My job changes after 9 p.m., becoming that of a charge to sleep. The sleep will be spotty, punctuated as it is by the sound of footsteps en route to a smoke on the stoop, or slammings of bathroom doors, or loud snores I can never with certainty trace to contentment or unsettlement. But other things as well stave off rest. Reflections on what transpired that evening or upon what may yet present a mini crisis in our midst before dawn. But also on what remains of the refreshment of spirit gained from that walk with Luke through Landover Woods. On how to move toward opportunities to affirm my children through the continuing differences that will challenge but invariably strengthen our bonds. On the wonderful opportunities I'm given to share the fruits of my journey with fellow elder travelers, even as our roads may become more daunting. And finally, on the call from a child to remember, to embrace the memories of moments of richness, knowing in the darkness on a thin mat on the floor of an old church, knowing with a strange certainty that I will likewise be remembered by those moments. I'm soon released to sleep, where I'll be hopefully recharged before being placed upon the unknown pulse points of tomorrow.